Welcome to another edition of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. Brought to you by our partners Dalmatian Productions, the Firehouse Tribune, FireTech, makers of on-scene soot and ash decon products, Hennessy Distributing, your source for the new cool towel, and the 2017 Great Florida Fire School. We'll be back with today's show right after these important messages. How would you like 5 days of quality fire training in sunny Southwest Florida? There'll be all types of classes, including hot classes, and some of the biggest names in the fire service today, all for an incredibly low registration fee. That's right. Join us at the Great Florida Fire School, November 8th through the 12th at the Fort Myers Holiday Inn. Guests include Instructor Captain John Dixon, Dan Kerrigan, Instructor Chris Baker, Ryan Pennington of Jump Seat Fuse, and presentations by some of the biggest names in the fire service today. That should be good enough. But one more big surprise. The registration fee is just $125. That's right, $1.25 for as many classes as you wish to attend and admission to the banquet. Want to register? Want to be a sponsor? Head over to thegreatfloridafireschool.org or call 800-883-4817. That's the Great FloridaFireSchool.org or call 800-883-4817. The Great Florida Fire School. Be there.
Sparky the Fire Dog here. Protect your family from fire. Make sure your home has smoke alarms in every bedroom, outside your sleeping areas, and on every level of your home, even your basement. For games and activities, go to Sparky.org.
We want to keep you, your family, and your community safer from fire. This message brought to you by the National Fire Protection Association and your local fire department. Visit Sparky.org.
We want to take a moment to tell you about one of our great sponsors, the Firehouse Tribune. Firehouse Tribune is an emergency services web-based platform where individuals can learn, train, and share ideas and experiences. In life, both on and off duty, we live by one creed. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. Interested? Find them on Twitter at FH Tribune and visit their website at www.thefirehousetribune.com. Remember to always work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. Hello and welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. And normally we insert a brief editorial at this point, but today I'm going to put that aside so I can give you a brief introduction to today's show. Our guest today is retired Captain Dennis Tucker from the Providence Fire Department. And Providence was the city in the United States that set the benchmark for the occurrence in the study of hydrogen cyanide poisoning. Probably without them, we may not even know as much as we do today. We also need to thank Chief Kurt Verone, because in September of 2006, he wrote a very exhaustive article about hydrogen cyanide poisoning in Fire Engineering magazine. However, the topic, when Captain Tucker presented to me, I knew nothing about it. I had heard about the term hydrogen cyanide, but I didn't know that it was such a pervasive danger in the fire service, not just back in 2006, but even more so today. And he'll explain why when we get to his interview. So we're also asking you if you have heard about the pervasiveness of hydrogen cyanide poisoning. And if you have or have not, please drop us a line at dalmatprod@outlook.com. Again, our email address is dalmatprod@outlook.com. We want and need to hear from you to get a feel for how much understanding there is out there amongst our listeners and the fire service. Right now, stay tuned, because after a few words, Captain Dennis Tucker. When you're done knocking down the flames, you want to hit the apparatus and head back to the barn, right? Wrong.
If you do, you're carrying all types of poisons and carcinogens with you and spreading them wherever you go. But you can clean your gear and yourself before you even leave the scene with a Fireground Decon Kit from the folks at FireTech. This kit contains everything you need to properly and safely decontaminate yourself while still on the scene. This kit includes a pop-up pod for a private changing room, exclusive Fireground Decon hose designed to reduce contamination, all-natural decon towels, a special PPE cleaner formulated to remove stubborn hydrocarbons and that meets NFPA 1851 standard, and more. With a cancer rate among firefighters at 60% against only 20% among the general population, we can no longer ignore the dangers we can't see. For more information, visit their website at www.firegrounddeconstore.com or call FireTech at 954-906-1118. Hurricane season is now, and that means it's time for you to get prepared. Remember these important points. You must have enough food, water, and first aid supplies to last 72 hours. Remember to stock enough water for both drinking and sanitation needs. You need 1 gallon per person per day. It's also a good idea to have water purification tools on hand, such as chlorine, iodine tablets, or unscented household bleach. Make sure you have enough prescription drugs and other necessary medical supplies. And it's a good idea to keep enough cash in case the power goes out and ATMs don't work. Be sure to fill your cars with gas. Have a first aid kit and keep it handy. Have a battery or solar-operated radio that will allow you to hear important emergency announcements. Know where your nearest shelter is located. Remember that most shelters do not allow pets, so be sure to make arrangements for your pet as well. Keep a 3 to 5 day supply of non-perishable foods as well as good flashlights and plenty of extra batteries. Remember, never, ever use any type of barbecue grill or generator indoors. You risk a major fire and serious injury or death from deadly carbon monoxide fumes. Your best tool for preparation is you. Prepare now and share the details with your family. Be prepared.
How would you like 5 days of quality fire training in sunny Southwest Florida? There will be all types of classes, including hot classes, and some of the biggest names in the fire service today, all for an incredibly low registration fee. That's right. Join us at the Great Florida Fire School, November 8th through the 12th, at the Fort Myers Holiday Inn. Guests include Instructor Captain John Dixon, Dan Kerrigan, Instructor Chris Baker, Ryan Pennington of Jump Seat Fuse, and presentations by some of the biggest names in the fire service today. That should be good enough. But one more big surprise. The registration fee is just $125. That's right, a buck and a quarter for as many classes as you wish to attend and admission to the banquet. Want to register? Want to be a sponsor? Head over to thegreatfloridafireschool.org or call 800-883-4817. That's the Great FloridaFireSchool.org or call 800-883-4817. The Great Florida Fire School. Be there. And welcome to this edition of Five Alarm Task Force News and Issues for today's first responders. And I need to tell you right from the start that this issue that we're going to talk about today is not one that, even with my 8 years in early on, many years ago, but all the years out that I've tried to stay attentive to the fire service, have I heard of this problem in particular? Have I heard of dangerous things in general? Certainly, we all have. But today, our guest is going to be addressing one of the issues that, even with everything I'm involved in, with many guests and many folks on Twitter for firefighter health, wellness, fitness, and our cancer initiative, this is a punch in the dark when you're least expecting it. And we're going to talk about that today. And that is hydrogen cyanide. And my guest today is Captain Dennis Tucker, retired captain. And here's just a little nothing of a resume for the captain. He joined the Cross Mills Volunteer Fire Department in 1978 at the age of 14. In Charlestown, Rhode Island. At age 16, he was admitted as a full member. 1982, he enlisted in the U.S. Air Force, and we thank you for your service, Cap.
Basic Training, July and August, and USAF Basic Firefighting School, an honor graduate. In 1986, he graduated the Air Force NCO Academy. In April, he received an honorable discharge of April of 86. April, again, of 86 through 90, he worked at Rhode Island Air National Guard Fire Department. And in 1989, he went to the Air Force's Fire Investigation School, and again, an honor graduate. From July 87 to September 88, he was a civilian firefighter with the Department of the Navy in New London and Groton. And my family had family in New London. They might still be there. In October 1988, April of 2016, over 28 years with the Providence, Rhode Island Fire Department. He was stationed at Broad Street Station, south part of the city. In July of 2005, he was promoted to the rank of lieutenant, and July of 2015, promoted to the rank of captain. His certifications, just a couple, NFPA 1001-1002, NFPA 1021, fire officer, NFPA 1041, fire service instructor, NFPA 1521, fire department safety officer, National Incident Management System, 100, 200, 700, 800, and Rhode Island EMT cardiac level. Other than that, this gentleman has not accomplished anything in his fire service career. Cap, welcome to the show, and thank you very much for sharing your time with us.
Well, thank you, Steve. It's been an honor just to ask to be on your show, and I apologize for the length of time it took to actually get on.
That's okay. I certainly understand it, and it's not a problem. I have many guests who treat me that way, so you're not the only one. But I'm glad we're finally together, and that's the most important part. And when you told me your topic, and you kind of held that to the end, really, and when I finally found out what it was, I even asked you, hydrogen cyanide, isn't that something we all know about and hear about? So I went back a little bit myself, and I couldn't find much of anything that I knew about hydrogen cyanide other than knowing that it was a poisonous gas. I had no idea I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, before I start, I wanted to acknowledge I will be referencing an article in Fire Engineering that appeared September 1st of 2006. It was authored by our retired Deputy Assistant Chief Kurt Verone.
Sure.
Who did a lot of work into that. So I wanted to acknowledge his work on this article that I'm referencing a lot. Either Captain or Chief now Kevin Jutris. He also contributed to the article as well. There's many websites I visited to find as much information as I could. because the article is 10 years old, but is still as much important, I believe, today as it was when this first came to light for us in 2006.
I don't doubt that now at all for a minute from my research has turned up. So let me ask you the number one question is, what connected you to hydrogen cyanide, and what made it get your interest?
What recently got me interested is I almost lost a very good friend of mine. He's a captain on the fire department. And a year ago, he suffered from the effects of being exposed to hydrogen cyanide after three houses were on fire in the area of Providence College.
Wow.
And I honestly haven't thought about the effects of what started this 10 years ago until this happened to him last year. What initially got it started was around March 23rd of 2006. We had a restaurant fire on Broad Street in Providence. And after that fire, we sent close to a dozen people to the hospital. One firefighter wasn't feeling right. He had symptoms such as headache, weakness, fatigue, shortness of breath, a cough. And when he got back to the station, firefighters were noticing this firefighter was talking incoherently. So he got transported to the hospital. And while he was being evaluated by physicians in the emergency room, this one doctor happened to walk by and noticed his condition and ordered he be tested for cyanide as well as carbon monoxide.
Uh-huh.
So the test came back positive that he was toxic for hydrogen cyanide.
Wow.
And within the next 24 hours, we had two additional fires where firefighters tested positive for hydrogen cyanide. And the three things that those fires had in common, they all had burning rubber, polyurethane foam, and plastic. And those three things right there are some of the things that give off hydrogen cyanide in large quantities. Now, what is a mystery, and this is one of the most complex issues I could have come on here with, because it's very confusing as to far as how it affects the body and why is it affecting firefighters at some fires and not others, when basically every basic house fire you go to has contents that contain plastic, or the furniture and contents are made of plastic or petroleum-based products.
Sure.
First fire, when it was determined that that cyanide was the culprit, we were thinking that it was an isolated incident. But after the two fires, within a 24-hour period, and we figured that something had to be going on, and it was determined that, and we don't know exactly why the cyanide was there. We don't know how it travels in the smoke, how it is affected in fires. And that's still a question to this day. I did have a fire where, and the symptoms do mirror the effects of carbon monoxide poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
We had a fire in 2007 where I was operating on the first floor, and the smoke on the first floor seemed like grayish, but looking up one of the stairwells, it looked like it was darker, it was blacker, and there was a window on the stairwell that I wanted to open. And as soon as I stepped up into the darker smoke, my cyanide detector went off, which is one of the things that the city of Providence did after the 2006 fires, was they put cyanide detectors on the air packs of every officer's seat in the city. So at least the officers had the ability to determine whether or not they were in a cyanide-contaminated atmosphere or not.
Right, right. Let me ask you this then. In that first fire in March of 2006, was the first firefighter who was taken ill, was he wearing his SCBA during the inside firefighting?
That is unknown. Because of where the fire was located, it was located underneath the roof. A lot of the fire was actually fought from the outside.
Right.
But whether they actually had their effects on or not, I know that was the one of the three fires I was actually at, and I don't recall whether I had mine on or not either. What they did do is, after the third fire, they called everyone that had been on scene previously at any of the three fires, if you're experiencing any symptoms, to go get checked out. And I regret to this day not going to get checked out, because you can have no symptoms, but it can still affect you hours later.
Wow.
Even a couple days later.
Phew. Man, this is something that really, like I said, is like a punch out of the dark when you least expect it. That with everything that we knew, even, I mean, 2006 is still relatively recent in our minds, basically. Yes, technology changes all the time, but and the fact that the city, they even had a cyanide detector they could assign to your SCBA units. But to think that this is a poison and an offshoot of basically what we do all the time, and we really weren't aware of it, even as late as 2006, is really strange and disheartening. We have some great people, as you said, who, like, you know, Chief Verone, I mean, a big name in the fire service, who thankfully wrote this article. And thankfully you told me about that ahead of time, and I tried to get to it, and I just was tied up with things before I had a chance. But it really is, this information is really very powerful, and I hope that our listeners, though we're 11 years later, I hope they're listening to every word you're going to share with us, because this problem may still be quite common without anybody realizing it to the same extent that you and the city did, and then Chief Verone did when he wrote the article.
Well, one thing I hope is that anyone listening references this article that he did write, because I'm trying to do it justice by what he did as far as trying to explain it, because it really is a complex issue. You have to understand how it affects you, how it gets into your system, what your body does once it's inside. And your body does have cyanide in it naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Your vitamin B12 is basically made up of cyanide, but you need it in order to live. That's how your body takes food and turns it into energy.
Interesting.
So that makes it complicated as well.
Sure, sure.
And we're going to get into how it affects your body, how you can treat it, and how it is treated, and even the antidotes. There's one out there that was developed in France that's awesome, and there's two others that if you give it to a smoke inhalation victim, it could be potentially fatal.
Oh, smokes.
So, it's, like I said, it's not the easiest topic I could have picked, but it's one that I feel that needs to get out there, even though it's been out there for 10 years. I'm not hearing anything nationwide as far, and I've seen a few other articles appear in Fire Engineering on it, but I'm seeing that, you know, firefighters suffering heart attacks, but I'm not seeing any links between the two, and I'm thinking that Providence is not the only place where this can be happening.
Very true.
It's happening elsewhere, but it may be undetected because it's not tested for, because the testing process takes so long that the emergency room doctors may just decide to treat and not wait for the results.
Mm-hmm.
Which, at best case scenario, it takes 2 hours to get results back.
Right.
Some other cases, it takes a week, 24 hours to a week for the results to come back.
Well,
we're lucky in Rhode Island, where Rhode Island Hospital is, at the time of Chief Verone's article, was one of the 8 labs in the country where they do the testing in-house and they can have the results back in 2 hours.
So that was very lucky. Very lucky indeed.
I was very lucky in so many different ways, because had that doctor not happened to walk by that firefighter's room where he was being evaluated and not heard what was going on and not seen his condition, he might not have ordered the test mm-hmm. in the first place, which in turn affected one of the firefighters who had a heart attack at one of the, he was at a second fire, but he had a heart attack when he was pump operator at the third fire.
Wow.
And then by that point, they knew to test for it, and he had elevated levels of cyanide as well.
Holy smoke.
His officer did not end up getting tested for, I believe it was something like 27 hours after, but he still had elevated levels of cyanide in his system.
Well, even that, even that long after, you still have the elevated levels. That's amazing.
You can have, this is where it gets confusing, because you can have elevated cyanide levels, but because your body has started the process of detoxifying on its own, it may show up that you have elevated levels, but you may not be toxic. That's where it starts to get confusing.
Right, right. Certainly. So let's continue with where we were. Now, I'm kind of sitting here stunned by this story and the facts with it, that are coming with it. So let's take ourselves outside of Providence, okay? And we're firefighters in Anytown, USA. And we do a room entry on a room and contents fire. And just like we normally do, we've done it before, like you said, we all know there's plastics and there's foam and furniture and stuff like that. They all give off. We have a lot of off-gassing, the soot, and now we know even the carcinogens are being released. So we're done with that fire, we do the overhaul, and we come out. Are we going to have any idea that especially if our town or community, municipality, has not had an experience and does not know enough to provide cyanide detectors, is the average firefighter going to come out of there knowing that, unless he has symptoms, that he has been poisoned by it?
Like I said, the symptoms mirror what the symptoms are for carbon monoxide, right, which are lightheadedness, giddiness, rapid breathing, rapid pulse, nausea, vomiting, confusion, restlessness, anxiety. The difference, hypertension and hypotension are one of the things that are associated with cyanide, especially the hypotension, which I think is what almost took my friend, the captain, away from us, was that he went to the hospital for a knee injury, and as luck had it, he was in the hospital in the emergency room already, and his blood pressure bottomed out, and he collapsed. Now, he wasn't at Rhode Island Hospital. He was at another hospital, and they had the antidote transported from Rhode Island to Roger Williams, where he was at.
Uh-huh. So that's something that, knowing that hypotension might be a clear a sign of it, that alone, we could, if we can get that message out to our departments, let them know when they're going through a rehab and they're being checked by the EMTs or the paramedics on scene, that should be a red flag, a possible red flag if they're doing rehab and they're checking basic vitals and they see a significantly hypotensive patient, that may be a sign right then and there of possible hydrogen cyanide poisoning.
That and any type of cardiac arrhythmia,
right,
is another sign. The captain I'm referring to at that time was in his late 50s. He is one of the most in shape and muscular people that I know. Had he not been in shape, would his survival been different? I don't know.
This is really amazing. And I would hope that, hopefully, number one, Chief Verone will hear this podcast, and hopefully maybe he can reissue his article again in a current issue of Fire Engineering, and maybe even do seminars that, you know, I know FDIC is already closed for the 2018 education programs, but, you know, this might be a topic that needs to be addressed just to the General Assembly, you know, just to the people, to let them know.
I think, that's why I chose it. I think the word needs to get out. Like I said, there had been subsequent articles in Fire Engineering on it. We were, as far as I know, the first in the nation to realize that it is a problem. There, it is on the scene. It's in every fire. It's there, but at some fires it's at a small extent, and some others it's at a larger extent. And why the difference is, you know, we don't know. Is it the quantity of material that's burning? We don't know. But even as recent as this spring with the tragic fire in London,
yes,
a lot of people were subject to cyanide poisoning, and that's what they determined the cause of death being, because when the building was renovated a couple of years ago, they put a cyanide-based insulation throughout the building. So when the fire went up the side of the building, that just unleashed a ton of hydrogen cyanide throughout the complex.
Wow.
Throughout the high-rise.
That is another right hook of this topic.
That is recent. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with what happened there. And that's a recent example of, it wasn't the firefighters being affected by it that I know of. They could have been. But a lot of the victims there were. And there were studies in Chief Arone's article, which I was able to Google it and pull it up. So it is still available online. And it's as relevant today as it was when he wrote it 10 years ago.
Absolutely, from what you've told us, absolutely. All right, we're going to take a little break here. And when we come back with Captain Tucker, we're going to talk more about the symptoms, what to look for, not just in your colleague, but look for in yourself. Then the captain is going to talk to us about the antidotes and what we have to be careful with, and what, you know, to know the right one at the right time for the right case. So we'll be back in just a couple of moments, so stand by, and we'll be back after these few words.
Psst. Yeah, you, it's me, your heart. Listen to me. We've got to talk. High blood pressure is serious, and yours? Whoa, what happened to us? We used to be so much more active. But lately, you've been ignoring me. I know you think I'm just gonna keep ticking away forever, but you're wrong. You can do so much more to control your high blood pressure. Doing the minimum isn't doing enough. I'm under a lot of pressure and can quit whenever I want. Bet you didn't know that. But I like my job. Just treat me better. Check on me. Give me something green to nibble on every once in a while. And maybe we can do some exercise on occasion. Let's get to it. After all, we're in this together.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
If spring is here now, summer is right around the corner. Maybe you work in the hot sun day in and day out. How about standing in line at the amusement parks with the kids? Just how can you keep cool? Well, Hennessy Distributing has the answer. Cool towels. Cool towels are 100% cotton towel with all natural ingredients. The best part? No water is needed. Open your cool pack, remove the towel, and give it a couple of shakes, and you're all set. Wrap it around your neckline like a kerchief. Wipe your face, arms, neck, or any exposed skin, and it is approximately 20 to 30 degrees below the ambient temperature. Wait, did it start to warm up? No problem. Just shake it a couple of times and Cool Towel delivers its refreshing cool touch all over again. When the cooling mixture has expired, use your Cool Towel as you would any cloth or rag around the house. Because it is manufactured from 100% cotton, your Cool Towel is 100% recyclable. For more information or to get your Cool Towel today, visit www.cooltowelonline.com or call 1-800-918-8323. Remember, another hot summer is on the way, and Cool Towel is your answer.
Do you know, Edith? Those letters stand for exit drills in the home. Plan and practice an escape drill for your entire family and agree on a single meeting place where everyone will meet and stay together until the fire department arrives. Then be sure to practice your exit drill at least twice a year. And remember, if there's a fire, get out and stay out. It's your fire safe response. This message is brought to you by this podcaster and your local fire department. And welcome back to our second segment of this edition of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. Our guest today is retired Captain Dennis Tucker from Providence, Rhode Island, who is absolutely positively giving us a news issue for first responders. And while normally we'd be focusing specifically on firefighters, I'm going to say that because of the topic of hydrogen cyanide, that it could be that a first responder working on the scene of a fire where hydrogen cyanide is being released in smoke, it's coming out of the structure or whatever, anybody who's on scene might possibly wind up being a victim to at least some of the symptoms. So today, yes, this broadcast is specifically for all first responders. The two words you need to remember, hydrogen cyanide. Cap is going to, on this segment, we're going to talk about what happens to your body when this poison gets into it. Okay, Cap, it's yours. Take it away.
All right. One thing I got from Chief Barone's article is, when you take a breath and you breathe in any air with hydrogen cyanide, over 60% of the inhaled air will be rapidly absorbed into the body. In a matter of seconds, the hydrogen cyanide or HCN will enter the bloodstream. It is at that point the body will begin the complex process of trying to detoxify itself before it can do any harm. And the body does this by binding the thiosulfate in the body to the cyanide molecule, creating thiocyanate. Once this thiocyanate is created, the cyanide is can no longer adversely affect the body's aerobic respirations and is no longer toxic. About 80% of the cyanide that gets into the bloodstream will be detoxified by the thiocyanate, which will be removed from the body during urination. And there are several other detoxification pathways that do exist. Now, once the cyanide is in the body, it's in the bloodstream, it has a half-life of about an hour. However, when the thiocyanate is created, its half-life is about 30 hours, which is what I referenced to earlier when I said you can have a high reading for cyanide levels, but it's really not that toxic because the thiocyanate will come out of the test as you have this much cyanide in your blood.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the blood cyanide levels, anywhere between 0 to 20 micrograms per deciliter is considered to be a normal level. Like the fire I had where my cyanide detector went off, it was a hot, humid day around 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I came out of the fire building. I felt I was exposed to carbon monoxide. I felt I was dehydrated. I was nauseous. I had three or four of the symptoms related to hydrogen cyanide or carbon monoxide. And the doctor told me my cyanide level was right at 20. And they say anything over 20 is considered toxic, though there are some claims out there that they think that anything over 50 is toxic. But everyone seems to agree that anything between 250 to 300 micrograms per deciliter are lethal. But there have been cases where victims have died with levels as low as 100 micrograms per deciliter.
Okay, let me ask you this question. One of the things we've heard a couple of times now is how similar the symptoms might be between the hydrocyanide poisoning and CO. Now, one of the things that most of us as first responders, firefighters, and at least EMTs and paramedics also learn is that one of the clear signs of CO poisoning is that ruddy, reddish feeling look to the skin. Is that also similar in hydrogen cyanide poisoning, or could that be a differentiating factor that you might have the physical symptoms of giddiness and stuff like that, but you won't have that look on the skin?
That could be a differentiating factor because I haven't read anything yet where you have that cherry red look to you on what you do with cyanide.
Okay.
And one of the difference between carbon monoxide and hydrogen cyanide poisoning is that with carbon monoxide, given the choice, for whatever reason, your blood loves carbon monoxide. So much to the fact that, given the choice, it will readily pick carbon monoxide 200 times more readily than it would oxygen.
Wow.
Which is why carbon monoxide is a problem, because you are deprived oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
Based on your blood's desire to have the carbon monoxide instead, which is where that becomes so deadly.
Yes, we saw that just
hydrogen cyanide, once that gets into the blood system, it stops your body from exchanging oxygen at the cellular level.
As opposed to the bloodstream. All right, so that's one thing that we can use towards the positive when we're assessing someone's symptoms, that most likely with hydrogen cyanide, while they may have the symptoms that we commonly see with CO, that they won't have that cherry red complexion that we normally see with that CO poisoning.
I'm just saying I have yet to read anything about that.
Right, right.
And all the websites I've been to and the research I've done, I have yet to see anything regarding skin color.
Right. Actually, from what you've said, probably the skin color is actually going to be just the opposite. It's going to be very, a very pallid looking victim.
Well, I don't think you're going to look great, because when I walked out of that fire building in 2007, every person I passed said, "Man, you look terrible." And the more I heard it, the more I felt lousy. And by the time I got to the rescue, they put me in the back, they put me on O2, and they started an IV, which is the best course of action for any type of fire victim. I don't want to get into treatment on scene so much, is because every municipality is different, every
right.
state's different as
Good
far
point.
As the EMS protocols. But high flow O2, you can't go wrong with that in any smoke inhalation victim or any fire victim.
Right, right. That's one of those basics we all learned. Those of us who went to EMT and or medic school. High flow and non-rebreather, and get them in as quick as we can. And as you've been listening, some of these numbers that Captain Tucker has been giving us kind of like jump out at us, and we would think maybe something else, but that the rates he mentioned earlier about 250 to 300 milligrams per deciliter is considered the lethal dose, yet many people consider lower doses just as lethal as well, and especially
well, the,
Go ahead.
If I could just correct you for a minute.
I'm sorry.
They agreed that those levels are lethal.
Right.
But they are the 250 to 300 micrograms. They agree that those are lethal, but they also point out that people with levels as low as 100 micrograms have died from from hydrogen cyanide poisoning.
Okay, so as low as 100. Okay, so that's an important number then for us to know. We need, you know, these thresholds are very important, not just for us, but for our medical, you know, medical providers as well. And again,
I was thinking as I was preparing this, you know, people are going to be listening in and they're saying, okay, well, that hasn't affected us yet. We don't know. Well, the unknown is that there's 200 to 400 heart attacks in the fire service at the fire ground in a given year.
Right.
Now, of those, are there any fatalities? If any of those are fatalities, could they have been avoided if they were administered the antidote? What is the antidote? How is that effective? And we're going to get into that later. But there is no downside to the antidote that's currently available. It's at the time of 2006, it wasn't FDA approved. It is now. It was developed in France. But we'll get into that in a few minutes.
Okay, so...
But the best thing you can do to protect yourself is to wear your breathing apparatus. Two, if your city does not have cyanide detectors for at least all the members, but I think what Providence did initially by putting one on the pack of every officer was a good way to go. The bad thing they did was they took them all off without any explanation.
Mm-hmm.
So they were just giving us those for testing purposes, and the free ride ran out, I don't know. But at least it'll give you a heads up that you have been exposed to. We had our set for 35 parts per million. So anytime that you're exposed to anything above that, and they weren't going off all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But that, it sticks out in my mind. That one fire that I went to the hospital on, where it was gray on the first, the smoke was gray on the first floor, and it was dark going up the stairs. As soon as I took three steps up the stairs, the cyanide detector went off. So it is still a mystery on how the cyanide travels through smoke.
I was just going to say that would be, because we've all seen the difference between a lighter gray mist on you know, the non-fire floor below, and then as we climb higher, if the seat of the fire is up there. But to think that all you did was go up three steps, which might, let's say, steps were what, six inch and 7 inches, I think, in residentials? Right.
Yeah.
So you went up maybe 20 inches, maybe a little bit more, and that made the difference to create make the detector sound. So that really does create a real gray area, pardon the pun, of how can we look to see if we're entering the a dangerous atmosphere for hydrogen cyanide or not. We know to stay out of thick, dark, black smoke. That's basic.
You may not be able to avoid, you know, if you're inside, you're fighting a fire, you may not be avoid, but you will have a heads up that you are exposed, and if you're feeling symptoms of it, you can at least get tested for it. And if it comes back positive, you can at least be getting the antidote, because the problem with hydrogen cyanide, it stays in your system for a while. I mean, some of what I've read, it can kill you within 8 days.
Holy smokes. So, again, that raises...
That's one person's opinion. It can affect you. It can kill you up to 8 days later.
So but, that raises another point that you brought up a moment ago about health, our annual health statistics in the fire service. So we might have had a firefighter who passed away maybe 5 or 6 days after a fire, and it was simply attributed to negative health, general health reaction, a high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, something like that. And even perhaps if an autopsy was done, they would not have normally looked for hydrogen cyanide for a death like that. So this raises another red flag that we have to be aware of, that of all these line of duty deaths we find on scene or maybe shortly thereafter, and sometimes we've seen in the article, this person was healthy as an ox. You know, Bill was always working out. He was running. He ate all the right foods. He never ate any chicken skin and never fats. He was slim and well. You know what? This might be an answer to a case like that.
It could be, and that's the purpose. That's why I picked this topic. That's why I wanted to, because I felt like the word still isn't out there, and Providence can't be the only place that this thing happens at. I mean, we had one firefighter suffer a heart attack in 2006. We had another one go down in 2016.
Was that one in 2000 last year? Was that one determined to be hydrogen cyanide poisoning?
Yes.
It was?
Yep.
Okay. And now, and at that time, the detectors were gone already, correct?
They were long gone by then.
Long gone by then. Yeah. Okay.
Unfortunately. Again, they're not going to prevent you from doing your job, but it's going to give you a heads up you were exposed. And if he had not had the knee injury, I'd hate to think what would have happened. He would have gone back to the station, and if he wasn't affected at the station, he could have gone home for either his 40s off or if he was in between days and nights or whatever. That could be anywhere in the country.
Exactly.
You catch a fire at 4 o'clock, you leave work at 6 o'clock, you go home, and bam, you get hit. I'm not trying to instill the fear of death into anybody.
No, not at all.
I just want to educate people as to this thing is out there. And if there are unknowns as far as, you know, this guy was in shape, but he had a heart attack, and, you know, if in the process of getting treatment that they, even if they don't get treatment for, even if they do get treated for cyanide, there is no downside with the new antidote that's out there. If they think you have cyanide poisoning and push this medication, it's not going to hurt you at all if you are not affected by the cyanide. Because like I said before, best case scenario, you're going to get results back in 2 hours, no less than 2 hours, whether you have poisoning or not. So no doctor out there is going to wait around 2 hours to find out whether you're affected by the cyanide or not.
Right, right.
They'll treat you for as best they can, but if they highly suspect that cyanide is an issue, they can push a medication that's not going to hurt you at all.
Right. Well, like, as I mentioned before, a lot of this can depend that if we can get enough people aware of this danger and this occurrence, that it goes down the pipeline so that just on a regular job, when someone's, you know, rotating out and going to rehab and they're getting checked by the EMTs or the paramedics, one of the things that they will have learned when they're working on a fire job is that there's a possibility, that's another danger that our firefighters are facing, and that's something we can put on our skill sheets to look for as we're taking vitals and treating them. Because lots of times I've seen video of rehabs where the EMTs or the paramedics are talking to the firefighters, how you doing, while they're taking their blood pressure and their pulse and checking respirator, how you doing, how you feeling, do you feel okay, you feel lightheaded or anything like that. So if we have them on the same team to this is one of the other things we look for. We look for if you're doing rehab on firefighters coming out from a working structure or room and contents fire, then those are another set of team players, another set of eyes, and other brains that are out there that can help. Hopefully, from what you're presenting, and what Chief Verone wrote in that article, that we can get people looking to help those who may have accidentally slipped off the radar because we didn't know to look for it.
Yeah, and there's another thing where firefighters are famous for this. I'm guilty of it myself, is that you come back from a fire at the end of the day, you're really not feeling that great, and it's like, you know what? I got 2 days off. I got 4 days off. I'll just suck it up and go home and I'll feel better in a couple of days. Well, I think those days should be coming to an end, because you have to look out. Not only do you owe it to yourself, you owe it to your family to make sure that you're in at least as in good of a shape as when you walked in the door at work as you did when you leave. If you have any question regarding your condition, whether it's any type of injury, regardless of any, you know, the cause, you should be checked out before going home.
Right. All right. Well, this is
if you go home and you're feeling like, oh, I'm not feeling that great. I feel a little nauseous. I'll be okay in a little while or whatever. I wouldn't roll the dice like that. I mean, I've done it. I haven't.
We all have, Chief. Okay. We've all done that.
That should be one of the things that's in the past. You know, if you get hurt at a fire, if you get hurt in the line of duty, you owe it to yourself, you owe it to your family to go get checked. And not only that, you owe it to your coworkers. If you're not 100%, you're not going to be able to help them.
You know,
you're not going to be able to do what you're supposed to be doing either.
You are chiming my echoes, because I did a show several months ago that I called Don't Be the Domino. And we've all seen domino experts on TV. They set up 3,000 of them, and they knock the first one over, and they all go tumbling down, and they come out with a beautiful picture. Those are good dominoes. A domino on the fire ground is you're the guy who thinks you always have to be on that nozzle, the first one over the threshold. You're going to knock down every fire. But you're not feeling too well today, but you're going to do it anyway because that's who you are. Everybody thinks of you as, I'm the number one guy they always want in front of them. But I said, if you're that first domino, the moment you go down, you're the first one and you're knocking every other domino on that fire ground down, because the guy behind you, the person behind you, has to help you get off the hose and make sure the hose gets shut down safely right away. The RIT team has to come in. They have to take over. The search team upstairs, they got to come down because they don't have a hose line protecting them at the moment. The roof team, they're probably going to have to come down to start taking over downstairs because we have to get you over to the paramedics, get you treated. So all the dominoes fall because you think you need to be the number one all the time. You don't have the right. You have a family. If it's either your parents and your brothers and sisters, or it's your spouse and your children, it's your family in that firehouse that you ride with all the time. You owe them to be honest with yourself and with them about your health. And what you've just said is exactly what made me write that show and record that show several months ago. And it's still available, called The Domino, just for that very reason. Like you said, you owe it to your colleagues and your comrades that you live a third of your life with while you're in the fire service. You owe it to them to admit if you're under the weather, you're not feeling right. We don't look at it as a sign of weakness anymore. That's old school. That's gone. Today, we look at it as we need to make sure you are okay. And probably there is nothing more important than your words of caution or my words of caution at this moment in the fire ground. And I think, you know, I thank you for sharing that emotion with me and that position, because we just have to stop that way of thinking and know that we owe it. There are a lot of people who are behind us waiting for us.
And not only that, you owe it to the people that you're there for, too.
Exactly.
The public in general.
Exactly. The people you protect, your family, everyone. You owe it to everyone there. Listen, you owe it to your taxpayers, okay? They're the ones paying your salary. You go down and everything goes sour, turns south. That's not good for anybody in that thing. So forget the bravado. We don't need it anymore. We need good smarts. We need firefighters with good smarts today. That's the most important thing. Good firefighting, good health, skills, everything combined will make a great firefighter today. So that's we're going to pause on that level on this segment from that, because I think that's a great note. And when we come back, Captain Tucker is going to talk to us now about antidotes, what to expect with them, from them, etc. So we'll be right back in just a few moments after these few words. Please stay tuned.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
How would you like 5 days of quality fire training in sunny Southwest Florida? There'll be all types of classes, including hot classes, and some of the biggest names in the fire service today, all for an incredibly low registration fee. That's right. Join us at the Great Florida Fire School, November 8th through the 12th at the Fort Myers Holiday Inn. Guests include Instructor Captain John Dixon, Dan Kerrigan, Instructor Chris Baker, Ryan Pennington of Jump Seat Fuse, and presentations by some of the biggest names in the fire service today. That should be good enough, but one more big surprise. The registration fee is just $125. That's right, a buck and a quarter for as many classes as you wish to attend and admission to the banquet. Want to register? Want to be a sponsor? Head over to thegreatfloridafireschool.org or call 800-883-4817. That's thegreatfloridafireschool.org or call 800-883-4817. The Great Florida Fire School. Be there.
Every year, over 1 million fires burn in America. Fortunately, firefighters are on the job, saving life and property, and you can be a part of it. 7 out of 10 firefighters and emergency responders are volunteers. There's no typical firefighter. Anyone can volunteer to serve their community. Volunteering as a first responder is really about having the heart and drive to make a difference where it's needed most. Your community needs you. Are you ready to answer the call? Learn more and find local volunteer opportunities at makemeafirefighter.org.
And we're back with our guest, Captain Dennis Tucker from Providence Fire Department, who has not just been telling us, he has actually been teaching us about the danger of hydrogen cyanide in the fires that we face almost on a daily basis. And in this segment, our third segment, Cap is going to talk about source materials for the gas, for the poison, some case studies, and he's going to talk about the antidotes. All right, so here we are with, you've had the other two parts, folks. Now here comes the icing on top of the cake. The source materials, pay attention to these. The case studies, we can all learn from, and the antidotes, if you're still in the field, you absolutely need to know about these. Go ahead, Cap, it's all yours.
All right. Modern materials basically are the culprit in the production of hydrogen cyanide once it starts burning. And they are the plastics, rubber, polyurethane foams, asphalt, nitriles. And they give off huge quantities of hydrogen cyanide as they burn. So basically, any building fire you go to, any car fire you go to, has the potential for giving off toxic levels of hydrogen cyanide. Now, what is still unknown is why is it present in some built in fires and not in others, how it travels in smoke, that we don't know. Like I said, when I went up the stairs in that building, it was there. I know it is lighter, hydrogen cyanide is lighter than air. Maybe that's why it was at the higher level and not at the lower levels. And to me, the basic way, the best way to protect yourself is wear your air pack as long as possible, as long as feasible inside a contaminated atmosphere. Now, I saw a cartoon on Twitter the other day about, you know, wearing an air pack at a car fire. What are you doing that for? And it's like, you know, that's the old school way of thinking compared to the way it should be done, because it's like going to a dumpster fire. The dumpster fire could be the most toxic thing you ever go to. There could be anything inside a dumpster.
Right.
It's like a car fire. Everything in the car today is made of plastics or and that is a perfect example of where hydrogen cyanide could be present.
Do we know at all if it can be absorbed through the skin pores?
Absolutely.
It can.
You can ingest it, you can absorb it, you can inhale it.
Right. So just as we, the people involved with the Cancer Initiative, one of the most important things that we're learning from that is that even when we're doing an overhaul, and even when, you know, the main fire is knocked down and we're doing an overhaul and we're all sweaty and we're all hot and we take off our bunker coats to get a little more air, that's the wrong thing to do at the absolutely wrong time, because the stuff that's burning is still off-gassing. We know that. That's a fact. That's not somebody's guess. That's a fact. We know that that stuff is still off-gassing. And so when we sweat, we also know, whether you're doing the lawn or you're fighting a room and contents fire, our pores open up to help us cool off. Well, as they open up, it's not a one-way door. So whatever's coming out, the heat that's coming out, still allows something to pass in. So we know that's how sometimes we're affected by the carcinogens in the soot and other toxins. Well, now, thanks to Captain Tucker, we know now that hydrogen cyanide can be absorbed in the same way. So don't take off your bunker gear when you're doing the overhaul, no matter how hot or sweaty you are. You need to get out, fine. Go out, rotate out, and go to rehab and let somebody else come in. But keep your gear on, because the more you're covered up, the better chance you have of protecting yourself from all the dangers, not just this one, not that one, but many of the dangers that we're facing when we're in a confined area fighting or having fought or fighting a working fire. And this now is proof for another one that we have to pay attention to. All right, so we're talking about materials. You know, when you mentioned the dumpster, that's a great point, because I'm sure we've all been on dumpster fires where we've seen furniture thrown away. And when they throw the mattresses in there or the couch cushions, all that, I told somebody once, when I started in 77, the first thing we learned about was kapok in furniture. But it turned out kapok really is a wood. It's not really a dangerous foam, but that's what we were told to watch out for. But today we know that all the furniture, the car seats, besides the plastic that wraps around them, it's the foam inside them. The polyurethane foam is inside them. So a dumpster fire, as the cap just mentioned, could be one of the deadliest fires you'll ever fight in your life. So it's no time to take off your SCBA because it's just, quote unquote, a dumpster fire. So a very important point, Captain. Thanks for making that.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm sorry, I'm just reviewing my notes real quick.
That's okay. I know you want to move.
Go ahead. You're talking about the foam insulation. I was just getting into case studies for those who don't think that wearing an air pack is needed all the time. There are case studies done in 2006 by Dr. Mark Eckstein and a Paul Maniscalco, incident they cite was a prison fire in Argentina where 35 inmates died. They burned polyurethane foam mattresses. Of the 35 inmates that died, they were all exposed to the smoke for only 3 to 5 minutes, and none of them have lethal levels of carbon monoxide. But 90% of the dead inmates had lethal levels of cyanide.
Wow.
A second instance they note is an aircraft fire in England where 54 people died, what all had lethal levels of cyanide and non-toxic levels of carbon monoxide. In 1990 in New York City, there was a Happy Land social club where a fire killed 87 people. 90% were found to have lethal amounts of cyanide in their system, and they had equally high levels of carbon monoxide as well. And I've already mentioned the Grenfell Tower in London. They're saying that they had high levels of cyanide there as well. So those are four instances where you can look where the fire victims had high levels of cyanide in their system. And it's got to be equally as well to the first responders.
True. Right.
But then they're not going to know that till after the fact, till the investigation is done.
Right.
In these instances anyway. So my advice, and again, I'm not trying to beat a dead horse. My reason for pointing this out is making people aware that this stuff is out there. It's been it jumped up in our face in 2006, and it resurfaced again last year.
You know,
and
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Like you said, it was news to you. You said you never heard about it.
That's
correct. And was starting to feel the same way as far as nationwide, because nationwide I don't hear. You know, I hear of cardiac issues on the scene. I hear of, but I don't hear anything involving cyanide. And like I said earlier, this cannot be the only place that this stuff happens at.
Exactly. So here's what I'm going to ask this to our listeners, okay? If you're listening to this podcast, whenever you're listening to it, you download it, you stream it, whatever. I don't care how you listen to it, as long as you listen to it. Would you do me a favor, please, and maybe do a lot of firefighters, your comrades, a favor too? If you've been made aware of hydrogen cyanide, specifically, really a real concentrated heads up given to you, whether it was at a course, a one-day seminar you took on a weekend, whatever, would you send an email, either an email to me at dalmatprod, dalmatprod, excuse me, that's short for Dalmatian Productions, dalmatprod@outlook.com, or send me a note on Twitter @dalmatprod, and you'll find me. Because I would really like to get some feedback from those of you who listen to our podcasts and like to know if you have specifically taken a course or been told about and warned about hydrogen cyanide and it being as common as the captain has explained to us today, as it was and has been in Providence. And as he says, it can't be just one little dinky town in New England that's dealing with this. It's got to be nationwide because we're all dealing with the same products. We all deal with plastics. We all deal with polystyrene foam. We all deal with the nitriles. We all deal with these kind of contents all the time. So please let me know. I will make notes from everybody. I will put it on another podcast and we'll get some of the information out there. I'm going to share this on our blog as well. And but I need your help. So again, send me an email, please, dalmatprod@outlook.com or on Twitter @dalmatprod. And I'm going to let the chief know about the results that we get because I want him to have feeling that he's vindication that it wasn't just in Providence. What he's doing today with us on the podcast is to help save as many firefighters as he can, who may not have heard about this problem.
that we've heard of today. All right, so we've talked now about the source materials. We've talked about the case studies, which are very powerful. The ones that you quoted were very powerful ones, and especially something as recent as the tragic fire in London just about a month ago. All right, so now we need to talk about the antidotes and how they're given, how they work. Let's go with that, please.
All right. From a firefighter's perspective, there is only one antidote out there for someone that is exposed to hydrogen cyanide, because this works with someone who has suffered from smoke inhalation as well. And that is called hydroxycobalamin. In the short, the trade name of that is CyanoKit.
CyanoKit.
Okay. Now, the benefit of this antidote is that you can be given this antidote even if you haven't suffered from hydrogen cyanide poisoning. You will not be negatively affected by this antidote. What this does is, if you're given the antidote and you are suffering from cyanide poisoning, the antidote combines with the cyanide and basically forms vitamin B12, which is excreted during urination. And that's it. The only side effects this has are pink discoloration of the skin, the urine, and the mucous membranes. Other than that, there are no side effects. They can given it's given usually by IV. And it detoxifies the cyanide without reducing the blood's capacity for carrying oxygen or causing hypotension, which is a problem with the other antidotes that are out there that were designed for cyanide poisoning, but not cyanide poisoning in conjunction with smoke inhalation.
Mm-hmm.
And the other antidotes given to someone who has suffered smoke inhalation, it could be fatal to them. So this, the CyanoKit, sounds like a great cure for hydrogen cyanide poisoning, because you have no side effects, there's no downside to getting this. And if you happen not to be poisoned by cyanide and they give it to you anyway, there's no ill effects to it.
Right, just like getting a shot of vitamin B12.
The other ones that were designed as probably years ago when they started using it in terrorism and on the battlefield, it was designed for someone that was not being subject to smoke inhalation as well.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. But we've progressed, thankfully.
And this antidote, the CyanoKit was developed in France and it received its approval by the federal regulators there in 1996. They have been treating people in the street using this stuff ever since, and they've had really good success reusing it. They are trained to it. As far as I know, I don't think anyone in this country, aside from any ALS, paramedic standpoint, they might, but I think they leave it to be treated. Any type of antidote is used in the hospital setting, which certainly is the case in Providence.
And that makes sense. You know, in many ways, it makes sense that it should be there in the hospital setting rather than in the field, because
that's why when I have talked about it, in other forums, I do recommend that. You have your city stockpile a little bit of this anyway. Have it readily accessible so that not only for the firefighters, but fire victims will benefit from this as well.
Absolutely. You can think of it as a banking snake venom, anti-venom. I'm lucky to live in South Florida where we have Miami-Dade Fire Rescue has one of the largest non-hospital anti-venom banks in the country. And they are able to get it out anywhere in South Florida. They've gone up, distributed up as far as Orlando, I know, in North Florida, and they've sent it up in other parts of the country as well. So think of the same thing. In the same way that your hospitals, your cities, your towns, we keep some sort of anti-venom either on their own or with a neighboring community, think of what you could do with banking some of these cyanocit doses in your community or as a several communities together, and the benefit it could have for any firefighter that gets caught in this situation. You know, you talk about a return on investment. You couldn't have anything better than saving the life of a firefighter or even a citizen who you rescue from a working fire, and they test positive for hydrogen cyanide, a high level of hydrogen cyanide, and they can give the, you know, administer the cyanocit to them. So, as the captain just said, there's no downside. Even if you don't need it, if you, they give it to you as a on a precaution, well, you know what? There's no downside to helping protect people in your community besides firefighters as well. At least the hospital, the medical people will know that they have a possible treatment for people who come in with hydrogen cyanide poisoning. Well, Cap, you have given us an eye-opener today, at least for me, I'm going to say, and I think for others, but I may be speaking wrong, and I'm giving our listeners a chance to prove me wrong. They may be well-versed, and they all know about it, and then, fine, I'll tuck my tail between my legs and get ridden out on a rail. But
they very well could be. They could know about it. They very well could. I'm just, from my vantage point, I'm not seeing, and I never have seen since 2006, anything even mentioned outside of Providence that this is a problem.
And what's kind of sad,
the couple of articles other than Chief Verone's article in Fire and Engineering.
Right. What's kind of sad is the fact that you said that the French drug authorities approved cyanocit in 1996.
That was kind of a shock to me that it was approved by then. And at the time of Chief Verone's article, it was still not approved by the FDA, but I know it is for a fact now.
Right. But boy, we got
to ask for a better antidote, as far as I'm concerned. It combines with the cyanide to
flush
make
it out.
Something that's already in the body anyway.
Right. Right.
It gets rid of it during urination, and if you don't actually need it, then it's not going to hurt you anyway. The worst case scenario is you're going to look a little pink, you're going to pee a little pink in color, and that's going to be it.
That'll be it. And if they make fun of you at the firehouse, that's
fine.
If
you do need it, it's definitely what you want.
Could be a lifesaver. Definitely be a lifesaver. Cap, I can't thank you enough for, I know it took us a while to put all this together and the timing and everything, but it's been a great interview and one just chock full of important, very, very important information for the fire service today. I just can't say thank you enough because I know you didn't feel, real comfortable at the beginning to do it, but you were like a regular radio guy. You did a great job.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay.
It was an honor to even be asked by you to do this. And once you invited me, once I decided on this topic, it's like there really wasn't another topic that I could do that, to me, that was more important. I mean, there's a lot of things close to my heart, like fire leadership, management, fire officer anything like that is high up there. But this one is definitely something that could be a lifesaver.
Without a doubt.
If the next one person out there that happens to hear this, then I'll feel good about it. If everyone else already knows about this, then great. But if they haven't heard about it, do yourself a favor. Check out Chief Barone's article. It was in September 1st of 2006 in Fire Engineering. Chief Barone and Kevin Dutrous, who co-authored the article, and they did an excellent job. And like I said, it's really is complex in trying to explain as far as how it affects your body. And Chief Barone did an awesome job. If he happens to hear this, I want to thank him because I did reference his article quite a bit to get through this. As the author, and he was my chief for a little while. He's an awesome guy. He's definitely knows this stuff.
That's for sure. All right. Well, again, thank you very much, Chief. Captain, it's been...
Thanks for the promotion.
Yeah, there you go.
You
did a great job and you get promoted. It's really been a pleasure to speak with you and for the information. And I'm going to share with you any feedback that I get from the emails or on Twitter, I will share with you to let you know what, if I get anything at all, I'll let you know what I've heard back regarding the topic. And again, all I ask you, our listeners, is that even if you don't want to write to me, talk about hydrogen cyanide with your comrades and your colleagues, okay? Talk about it in the firehouse. Make sure everybody's on a level playing field about it, because just if you tell one person who didn't know that much about it, and you can perhaps save their lives, you can ask for a better day than that. So, again, my thanks to Captain Dennis Tucker from Providence, and we'll be right back right after this word. The tone sound and the dispatcher announces, Station 14 and 16, working residential structure, and that was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams and you take stock of your PPE, bunker pants, check, turnout coat, check, hood, check, gloves, check, escape line, check, SCBA, strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lay, and head for the open front door where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy is behind you. You crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything. What the hell are you thinking? You see it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap of the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores of your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go home to. Face peace on.
And that wraps another edition of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. We'd like to thank our guest, retired Captain Dennis Tucker of the Providence Fire Department, for joining us to discuss the prevalence and dangers of hydrogen cyanide gas. Did you know you can now find us and subscribe to us on iTunes? Just search for Five Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our partners, Dalmatian Productions, the Firehouse Tribune, FireTech, Hennessy Distributing, and the Great Florida Fire School. Portions of instrumental music on Five Alarm Task Force are courtesy of Lee Rosevere. Find more of his music at happypuppyrecords.ca. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a comment about a show, please drop us a line at dalmatprod@outlook.com. We want to know that we're bringing you the topics that you are interested in. You can follow us on Twitter at dalmatprod or at cause_origin and stay up to date with our blog at bit.ly/dalmatprodtv. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe and let's make sure everyone goes home.